traffic information systems, their benefits and their limits. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for the download today. Bob Miller is with me, the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob is also a flight instructor, has an operation at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York. Bob, again, thanks for taking some time out to talk to me today.
Well, I enjoy being with you, Paul.
In the February edition of Over the Airwaves, Bob, you talked about traffic information systems, how they enhance safety but have some limitations. For some of our general aviation listeners who maybe don't have a close acquaintance with TIS, tell us what it is.
TIS, Traffic Information Systems, TAS, Traffic Advisory Systems, are small stepchildren to a much more sophisticated system known as TCAS, Traffic Collision Alert Systems, that we find on more sophisticated corporate jets and airliners. The TIS that I referred to in the article and the other system, the TAS, are very similar in that they respond or interrogate a reflected signal from ATC in most cases. In the TIS system, the ATC will receive a transponder code and then rebroadcast it out for TIS-equipped airplanes to identify it. TAS works a little bit differently. But in both of those cases, there are serious limitations as to whether or not they're to be dependent on solely instead of looking out the window. There are lots of limitations. For example, Paul, in order for either the TIS or the TAS system to operate, the other aircraft must have a transponder and it must be turned on in order to be even interrogated. So it eliminates or will not see a non-transponder equipped aircraft out there, or one that's equipped but not turned on, and thereby providing what we might call a false negative readout to the pilot.
So I guess the message then is that this is great, but it can't possibly replace see and avoid.
Boy, I couldn't have said it any stronger than that. We train with TIS equipped airplanes up at Bob Miller Flight Training on each of our airplanes. But it's certainly reassuring to get a signal or an interrogation knowing something's out there that we did not see. That certainly, secures our attention. But then again, we must be looking out the window all the time. To rely only on that equipment is outright foolhardy. So it's nice to have. It provides an added measure of protection, but it's not replacement to looking out the window.
There's an interesting thing coming technologically, Bob. ADS-B is going to be required eventually. I think 2020 is the target date. It's going to be required for operation in the national airspace system at certain altitudes. If I understand the way that works correctly, that means that any plane operating in those airspaces will generate a GPS-based coded signal that can be used by other aircraft in the area, which has the potential to make traffic avoidance in GA aircraft more universal and more accurate. But I guess I worry that there's always somebody flying in airspace where they're not technically equipped to operate.
Yeah, and that's the problem. As long as everybody's abiding by the rules, then these things work. They work. But if somebody's there and where he shouldn't be and we don't see them, or there's an equipment malfunction, somebody has a power failure, and their transponder's not sending out the required ADS-B signal, then he's a potential hazard out there. Nobody's ever going to be replacing ATC, the air traffic controller who's got his eyes on things or her eyes on things. I don't think anything's going to replace actual radar as we now have it, simply because, we're still in a world environment where the other guy, and I'm speaking of non-U.S. friendly aircraft, don't abide by U.S. rules. And so there's always going to be a need to identify other aircraft by live radar as opposed to just the ADS-B. ADS-B is going to be a great help. It's going to facilitate, but again, it's not going to replace totally, current technology and certainly looking out the window.
Well, Bob, when we get back from the break, something else you talked about in the February edition of Over the Airwaves was how to do a proper general aviation passenger briefing, and I think that often gets overlooked. We'll talk about that in a moment. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about safety issues today. And Bob, in the February edition of your newsletter, you had a really interesting discussion about passenger briefings. We're all familiar, if we've flown airlines, with how those work. And you say that, you know, sometimes it's even to the point where if you're a frequent flyer, you may be annoyed by the intrusiveness of them. But we're required just as legally to give them to passengers in a general aviation aircraft. And that seems to be a somewhat casual process at times.
Well, indeed, it is casual because here again, if we fly often enough, we make these mistakes ourselves. And I've flown often enough to have made this kind of mistake. I reported on a situation where I took off in my 210. Now my family flies with me, you know, many, many times. On this particular flight, we had climbed up to 19 or 20,000 feet, and I turned around, and, you know, having conversation with my wife, who was sitting in the back seat of the 210, and she indeed is slumped over in a very, very unnatural position. It wasn't as if she were sleeping. And I look back, and to my horror, I saw that the connector for the oxygen mask was not connected properly to the outlet in the aircraft. And she'd been up there a fair number of minutes to the point where she had just literally zoned out. And so we made an emergency descent and, you know, got back into oxygen breathing air. And she came around as if nothing happened on her part. But, you know, had I not turned around and looked, we could have had a real disaster there. Now, was it my responsibility to ensure that her mask was properly connected to the aircraft? You bet it was. There's no way I, as a pilot in command, can make any assumptions in that regard. So even when we're traveling with people who travel frequently with us, like when we travel with other flight instructors, when we travel with our students, our buddies, we still have a responsibility to ensure that everything on board that airplane is handled properly, and that includes ensuring that our passengers' seat belts are properly fastened, oxygen is properly fastened, whatever it might be. Doors are closed properly and latched properly. This is something that we very often assume the other person knows what to do, but that assumption can get us into trouble.
Well, Bob, you mentioned basic elements of a proper passenger briefing, and you have five bullet points there. And it occurs to me in looking down these that we think of a passenger briefing. Briefing may not be the right term because a briefing, you impart information to someone. We actually need to check and make sure that they have understood and complied with it.
Yeah, it's two ways. I mean, more than just looking. Ask the passenger if they're comfortable. You know, we have to physically check and give a tug on their seatbelt. We have to reach over and see that door is properly latched. Now, this is increasingly important with more sophisticated airplanes with doors that open upward, such as the Cirrus and the Cessna Corvallis. When those doors pop open in flight, you very often can lose the door, unlike the older Cessnas and Pipers where the hinge is on the front. It's very difficult, and if the door popped open, no problem. They need to know how to get out of the airplane and exit the aircraft if it needs to be done in a hurry. And lastly, for pilot passengers, and this is incredibly important, We have to know at all times who's flying the airplane. We call this positive exchange of controls. Very often these five elements that I just touched upon are not shown in any checklist that we use to in our pre-flight process. So this is something that we should put on our checklist or commit it to memory every time we launch.
Well, I'm envisioning a sticker on the back of the headrest.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually probably should be a formal checklist, even if it only has 5 points on it.
Sure.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate the thought-provoking comments, and we'll look for you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Find the current issue of Bob's newsletter and details on how to get an email notice when each new one comes out at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.